Adonai, Otetaioe Afinei Ia Tato, Tihe Mauriora. This is the Green Desk on 95 BFM.
It is indeed the Green Desk. This week for Green Desk, Mitch speaks to Forest and Bird Chief Executive Kevin Haig about the recent marine report released by the Ministry for the Environment. Like many others which have come before it, the report strung together a wealth of existing data on our marine environment, which is only seen in action in recent times. The report synthesizes the data and categorizes the findings into four priority issues, which environment groups are urging the government to act on. Kevin and Mitchell discuss what it will take to act on these points, as well as some of the first actions Forest and Bird would like to see taken in response to the document. To begin, Mitch asks Kevin to briefly discuss the priority issues identified in the report.
The main thing that people need to understand, so first of all, there really wasn't a heck of a lot of stuff that was new in this report. So we knew that the fishing industry was catching a lot of non-target species, and the ones that we're concerned about, of course, are things like dolphins and penguins and sea lions and albatross, for example. So bycatch by the industry was, you know, we knew was a significant issue. Another of the issues that they've raised is ocean acidification, which, of course, is not climate change, but is caused by the same cause as climate change. So pumping carbon into the atmosphere, most of it gets absorbed by the sea. One of the consequences of that is that it turns the ocean acidic. That has implications for marine life down the track. And we've just published a report on that, so it's not new. The sort of loss of species, loss of food chains and ecosystems under the water, you know, clearly that's another issue that we know about. And the impacts of pollution on our oceans, again, have had some focus with marine plastics in particular being really in the public eye. So none of those are new things, but what the report really does is synthesize those all into a whole and basically says that for basically 100 years, the way that human beings and particularly our economic activities have interacted with the ocean have created this complex of interacting negative effects, negative and cumulative effects that have left our ocean ecosystems in a very bad way. So really, that's what the report says.
I find it interesting that you, well, not interesting, but it is true that all this information already exists. So what do you think it's going to take for government to actually take action? Obviously, the information's there, but it's not being acted on. How do we bring this into sight and into mind of people that have the power to vote to actually call for the action?
Yeah, into sight, into mind. That's a great phrase. It's the obvious of out of sight, out of mind, which really has been the problem. You know, these effects have been occurring for 100 years. They've largely occurred because most people are not in a position to see what's happening under the water. And I think that in the last few years, we are having a lot more success in enabling people to understand some of these impacts. So for years and years, for example, in the fishing industry, bycatch of dolphins was just an absolutely routine thing, and the public didn't know about it and therefore wasn't in a position to care about it. In the last few years, we've actually really been bringing that to the fore, showing the public pictures of what it looks like, you know, when, you know, a rare dolphin is brought up in a fishing net, or, you know, a yellow-eyed penguin is drowned in a set net. So I think modern communication technology is really helping a lot in actually bringing what's happening out at sea and under the water into people's living rooms and consciousness. And we're really aware of a kind of growing public demand for change. So we certainly feel like we have a lot of public backing when we campaign, as we are at the moment, for example, for zero bycatch, you know, like trying to have policy, law, regulation, fishing practice, all aiming to absolutely minimise bycatch and to try and make that zero if we possibly can.
I know I personally, I always talk about this, but I sound like a bit of a broken record going on about this all the time. But the decision, I think it was late last year, early this year, I think New Zealand First and Labour, they got rid of the cameras on boats initiative that National was about to bring in. How are we going to move towards having industry accountability? Because you can't have the industry reporting on themselves. I know I saw another media outlet was speaking to Seafood NZ and they were talking about how they've had record lows in terms of bycatch, but
how would you know?
Yeah, exactly. So what would you like to see in terms of making industries accountable? And, you know, the public is in support of this, but how is it possible that the industry is still able to have enough leverage that they are getting these policies removed from Parliament?
Yeah, what ministers tell me is that they are still committed to introducing cameras on every boat, and that the current trial of cameras on every boat that's operating in Maui's dolphin habitat is the forerunner of basically trying to establish exactly how to make the system work. You've probably heard me in the past saying that we actually don't need our own trial because lots of other countries and other jurisdictions already have cameras on every boat, so we can learn from them, surely. So although I would continue to argue that we didn't need a pilot, now I do take note of government's stated intention that they are still intending to press ahead, and have to take some heart from that. But your underlying point is exactly right, you know, that because most of our maritime activities, you know, our sort of human interaction with the ocean occurs out of people's direct observation, we need to find a way of ensuring that industry doesn't police itself. So that's giving some more spine to MPI, you know, that has the regulatory role and You know, we've certainly published lots of reports that indicate that MPI has essentially had a, inverted commas, light touch approach to that regulatory role, kind of a bit similar to the approach the Occupational Safety and Health Act at the Pike River coal mine, where it saw breaches of the law occurring but chose to do nothing with those, instead hoping that they could educate, you know, the coal mine and the Pike River case and fishing companies in these marine cases to actually change their behaviour. And I don't think there's a lot of evidence that that occurs. So we actually need a bit more spine in MPI as well.
Do you think, this is quite a sad thought for me personally, but do you think that we need to, especially when looking at things like Maui Dolphin and things, stop looking at them intrinsically and start really pushing the economic value in terms of even employment in these industries and things like that to really start seeing some change?
I don't think that's necessary. I think maybe I'm being a bit unduly optimistic, but I notice that when I connect with New Zealanders, which I do a lot, you know, I sort of go on speaking tours and talk to the news media and so on, that actually most people get the arguments about intrinsic value, and if you instead make your arguments solely on the basis of, well, you know, it's part of our, you know, international brand, but while that works for some people, for some others, it actually cheapens the argument. And so I think it's important that we have that argument in the toolbox and that people understand that there is economic value in protecting our marine environment and those amazing marine species that we have. The economic value should never become the main argument, but actually it should be inherent value. Mm. I kind of feel the same about human interest as well. You know, so one of the reasons that we should be protecting ecosystems is, well, we're part of them. You know, human beings aren't somehow not part of nature, and just as every other species in an ecosystem depends on the whole system, so do we. But I don't believe that should become our main argument at any point. It could add to it, but intrinsic value just has to remain the main argument we make.
So we've got all this information. Well, we already had this information. We've got the synthesis of all this information. Now, what do you want to see happen immediately? What's the first actions you want to see?
probably the very first action I think that we should see is commitment from the Minister of Fisheries, Fisheries New Zealand, which is the division of MPI that regulates the industry,
mm-hmm.
and fishing companies. They should all sign up to our Zero Bycatch Pledge and say that they also commit themselves to try and achieve zero bycatch or as close as possible to that goal. That would be a fantastic first step. Second step might be for government to pass new legislation protecting the southeast marine protected areas, Hauraki Gulf and the Kermadec Rangitahua Ocean Sanctuary, which are proposed marine protected areas, just haven't got off the ground because government is sort of weighed down in arguments with basically fishing industry interests. And to some extent, iwi, and that's, I guess, the next step, which may be required to facilitate some of those new marine protection areas, is government getting serious in its negotiation with mana whenua, or I guess mana moana interests, iwi and hapu, so that we actually negotiate what our shared position is on marine conservation, because governments of all stripes have found that to be too hard to do. And what that means for our marine ecosystems is that many of them are in collapse. You know, we've got 90% of our seabirds moving towards extinction. That's a third of the world's seabird species. You know, this is a crisis that requires urgency from government.
That was The Green Desk on 95 BFM. Tihei Moriora.